time now for Outsiders. I'm Barry Cassidy and you're not.
Yes, indeed. And joining you for Outsiders today, editor of The Monthly, Nick Fike, policy analyst for the Centre of Independent Studies, Trish Jar, and marketing guru, Toby Ralph. All hail, guru.
Good morning.
Morning.
Good morning.
Well, I think we probably are going to talk about budget stuff, are we not? But let's try and broaden it into some issues of consequence. And what I wonder is whether this budget ends this period we've had of the politics of the middle ground.
He is a low-rent, soft cutter of Commonwealth outlays, while a hard and unforgiving cutter of state payments to the states. This is a budget that would seek to demolish the pillars of Australian society, Medicare, education for all, a fair pension, full employment. The very things that this Prime Minister promised not to touch are the first casualties of his fabrications.
There's Opposition Leader Bill Shorten making his budget reply. Nick, is he right? Is this this budget mark a shift for Conservative politics over to the right? Yeah. Leaving Labor there with the middle ground to play with.
Well, I think it says a lot about the budget that it actually managed to deal Bill Shorten back into the game. It's the first time he's felt like a sort of vital figure in Australian politics for several months now. I'm not sure if he got a new speechwriter, but he was right on the ground that he wants Labor to be on health and education, pensioners, poor people. These are issues that the Labor Party would love to talk about, and they were just invited to speak about it.
Which, Tricia, make the politics of the budget really interesting, because it completely creates that opportunity.
Yeah, I think that's true. But I wonder if we're not overstating the conservativeness of this budget a little bit. I mean, my political memory isn't particularly long, but weren't people saying the same thing about John Howard in 1996? Maybe it was a bit different then because, you know, Hawke and Keating had been in power for so long, and so there was a certain amount of exhaustion, I guess, and in contrast, Labor have only been around for 6 years. But, I mean, the first Howard budget was a lot tougher than this one was, and I wonder if it's just being overstated.
Is it a matter, Toby, purely of toughness or of where that toughness is directed?
It's where it's directed. I don't think it's a particularly tough budget. I mean, they've taken away from a lot of places, but they've also spent money in a lot of new places. Is it dividing the two parties? Yes. But fortunately, of course, we have the middle ground solution of Clive Palmer becoming
what an abundant middle ground that is.
Becoming far more popular. His vote is rocketing up, and that's an alarming thing.
But, look, I think it's a very interesting moment. I mean, and that issue of fairness, which is something which the government has been so keen to promote, I mean, hence the debt levy. This is the complete fig leaf for the entire budgetary process. And yet we have no touching, for example, of superannuation tax concessions and the billions of dollars that are held there. We have the strange performance around the Medicare co-payment with it being siphoned off to cure cancer and Alzheimer's. There's all sorts of weirdnesses about this.
Yeah, well, I think, the reason that it's been badly received, and I think it's pretty fair to say it's been fairly badly received across the community.
Which would have been the expectation.
Well, the expectation was that it would be a tough budget. The strange thing is that over the next 2 or 3 years, the budget bottom line, the overall numbers are not that much different from what the Labor Party was going to deliver according to the Treasury's estimates. So for all the talk of toughness, they don't seem to have won much in terms of the bottom line. The problem is the gap between the rhetoric that they went in with and what the budget actually said. So people were expecting that everyone would have to cop, everyone would have to tighten their belts. But as it turns out, the only people that really have to tighten their belt are the people that can least afford it. Like you say, company tax is actually going to drop at the very time when more revenue is required in 3 to 4 years, when the major cuts kick in. That's when the deficit levy drops off for high-income earners. How does that make sense?
There are mixed messages, aren't there, Tricia, in that? I mean, and that's perhaps what gives the budget a sense of the ideological over the purely fiscal, that the money isn't there, the money isn't being made, and yet tough cuts are being, at the same time, implemented.
I think that's true to a certain extent, although I personally am not a big fan of increasing increasing taxes to bring in more revenue. I do think that the cuts could be better targeted, for example. I mean, there's about $10 billion in corporate welfare per year, and only, I think, $850 million of that has been targeted in the budget. And by comparison, one of the harshest measures we see in the budget was the changes to welfare for under-30s, which apparently only saves about $1.2 billion over 4 years. So I can totally understand where the opprobrium is coming from.
I think there's quite a lot of it's a symbolic change. You know, I mean, the tax take is going from 23% of GDP up to 25% by 2017, 2018. Yeah. So it's not as if they're actually cutting. We're still in a situation where only one in five people actually contributes more than they get from the budget. From tax, which feels, that smells wrong to me, you know. If four out of five people are net beneficiaries and one out of five is actually losing dough, that suggests to me that tax is still too high and there's still too much middle-class welfare. Now, they started knocking that back, but then they sort of took with one hand and they gave with the other to what appear to be some pretty silly things.
And, I mean, that's the interesting thing too. It all depends for the success of the strategy on how well they sell the notion of the problems around the budget. And I'm not sure that that's been so effectively sold. I'm not sure that we're all completely convinced about the state of emergency.
Well, I don't think even the government obviously is not convinced about the state, about the budget emergency, because they've embarked on a $20 billion program, a medical research fund, the biggest in the world, apparently. Who asked for this? Where was the driving force for this? And the money that's being collected from the Medicare co-payment, it's not, I mean, it might, some of it might be going to that, but you can't say on the one hand to people, we really don't have any money, you've got to start paying for your own doctor's
and
bills.
This is before we talk about the likes of school chaplaincy programs, exactly. For example.
Yeah, right. And then on the other hand you say, but we've actually found $20 billion to put into a medical research fund. Is it like, is this an emergency or is it not?
How do we work that out, Tricia? I mean, how do we, what is the clear message there between cuts and emergency and, you know, why is that so muddled?
Well, I think part of it is basically just been political expediency. So obviously in the lead up to the last election, the government was kind of carping on about budget emergencies because it suited their purpose, because it made the government look weak or, you know, cowardly or whatever, and made them look like big spenders. So that's part of it. Unfortunately, I actually agree that the budget needs to be brought back into surplus. But, I mean, I think that the thing with the cuts is mostly just that the government, it's quite clear that the government either doesn't take its own rhetoric seriously or thinks that there are other ways of getting around things. With the effect of, I guess, kind of not touching some of the bigger areas of spending and just kind of lobbing the ball to other people.
I mean, there's a challenge for Toby, for Labor in responding to this. I mean, in using that opportunity, if there is one, of being in the centre. I mean, the challenge for them is to come up with an alternative prescription for how you solve what I think we all understand is some basic problems around the budget. And the alternative solution is basically around tax, which is awkward.
It is. I think what's happened here is that there's just been a bit too much exaggeration. I mean, it was true that we were spending $150 million a day more than we were collecting in tax. At what point does that become an emergency? I don't think it's an emergency yet, but it's politically expedient to say so. Do you need to change it? Yes, you do. But if you exaggerate it too much, nobody's going to believe you.
And there's the whole belief thing, of course, Nick, which is a bit of a subtext around this on promises made and then not necessarily delivered.
Yeah, well, I mean, the health and education cuts, it's been so badly handled. I mean, the fact that they made such a strong promise days before the election
of unity ticket on education.
Yeah, well, that was the first mistake. But the second mistake is coming out and announcing the cuts before you want to speak about the revenue. I'll give you an alternative to what they could have done. If, for example, they'd come out and said, the health and education spending is unsustainable. In a few years, it's really going to blow out. So over the next couple of years, let's talk about alternative revenue sources. We're going to have to think about the GST. we've got years to do this, it'll be after the next election, you can vote on it. People would have said, actually, that's a really good idea. People would have said, we're happy to pay more for health and education. And you would have had this issue where you have a sustainable source of revenue, at least a conversation that's mature. In this case, the morning after the budget, the headlines are $80 billion cut out of health and education. They didn't put in brackets 3 years. But it's, I mean, how could they have put themselves in this position where they're announcing $80 billion of cuts before they're even ready to talk about revenue?
And what Tricia, did you make of the Treasurer's body language in communicating that? That, you know, states, your problem, deal with it.
Oh, I thought it was quite amusing, actually. So his speech in particular, he seemed very kind of awkward and stilted. And I think what was the speech itself was sort of not that interesting. What was more interesting, I thought, was what came after, which was partially the interview with Sarah Ferguson on the ABC, which was quite enjoyable for everybody to watch, to see the Treasurer sweating it out.
That was a remarkable piece of interrogation. And look, I suspect there will be much more of that to come in the next wee while as this budget process unravels. We've got more of that coming up in a moment, but thank you first to our outsiders this morning who have been editor of the Monthly, Nick Fyke, policy analyst for the Centre for Independent Studies, Trish Jar, and marketing guru, Toby Ralph. Did I say more budget?